Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast. Patrick here. I'm the host and creator of this great and growing show, growing because of you, the listener and supporter. This is episode 250. Amazing. And we continue to grow because, again, because of you. It's not because of me. You're tuning in and you're spending a little bit of your valuable time listening to the show, and I thank you so much. Special thanks to all those first responders out there, brave men and women who work in the criminal justice field, no matter what you're doing in the field, thank you so much. Keep up the fantastic work. I am so excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. It's an amazing coffee company. I rave about this company because every day I start my day with mushroom coffee. No, it doesn't taste like mushrooms. It is very good for you and gives me that extra zip to get through the day. If you head over to CJ Evolution, the website, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. They don't only have coffees, they have cocos and elixirs that you're just going to love. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. You know, folks, we continue to grow because not only listeners and supporters, but because of rankings. If you head over to iTunes and rate and review my podcast, I sure would appreciate it. It just takes a couple seconds, a minute at best, to give a rating and review of the CJ Evolution Podcast. Thank you so much. I do appreciate it. You know, folks, my next guest is a rock star. She's been on the show a couple times before, and she always, always has great and practical advice for the criminal justice professional. And in this episode, we dig deep into some of the most important issues facing law enforcement today. So grab a pen and paper and take some notes with this very, very awesome and powerful guest. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am super excited to have my good friend, Tracy Kesey, back on the show. She's been on the show a couple times before. She's a wonderful guest, wonderful person. She is the Deputy Commissioner of Equity and Inclusion for the New York City Police Department. Hello, Tracy.
Good morning, or I should say good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
I think it was, I was looking at my records, and I think it was about a year ago you were on.
Has it been a year already?
I think it's been a year.
Wow.
I mean, it's insane. Time flies.
It does.
Now, how's the weather out in New York City right now?
It's a little cold. I'm sure you were watching the news on the snowstorm that we had that paralyzed the city day before yesterday. So it was a little different. Colorado usually does that a little differently, so it was interesting.
Now, what happens when in New York City, forgive my ignorance, but you have a major snowstorm, does the whole city go on accident alert?
You have to be, in order to go on accident alert, you have to be able to move. Everything was at a standstill. So I'm sure they have some equivalent of that.
Yeah.
Definitely there was accidents, but there was just, I mean, cars were everywhere.
Oh, geez.
Everywhere. They're still trying to figure out what happened.
Now, for those people out there not listening to the show, Tracy, they might not know who you are, even though you've been on the show a couple times before. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you began your career in law enforcement?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. So my career in law enforcement began with the Denver Police Department. It seems like forever, a long time ago. I did 25 years with Denver PD, enjoyed every bit of it. Also, during my time there, I co-founded the Center for Policing Equity, which is a research think tank that works with community universities and law enforcement on research, especially in issues of equity, unconscious bias. So those things that I've worked on for most of my career. Retired from Denver after 25 years, came to New York, actually worked on a Department of Justice initiative called the National Initiative. For building community trust and justice with six cities here at John Jay. And then was asked to come over to NYPD to be the Deputy Commissioner of Training, to do a lot of work with a lot of wonderful people and do some fun different things there. And then earlier this year, I was asked by the police commissioner to create this new sort of area for him. And I have been doing that for the past year, and that is the Office of Equity and Inclusion. And it is what it sounds. It is really first and foremost a focus on inside the organization and those structures, policies, and procedures that impede folks from being successful. And so for us here in NYPD, it means a couple things. Yeah. How you get promoted, how you get to special assignments, special units, training, all of those things. So it is a really out front, unique way to take a look at the organization and to be bold enough to say we're, you know, we don't have it right yet and we need to work on that. So
well, I mean, I think, yeah, you know. You know, every department has issues or a lot of issues or problem areas that they always have to constantly work on and improve. What now? You're the first department in the country that has this, right, Tracy?
We are. And so you have some that'll have, they'll call it something different. It might be diversity and inclusion. And usually they focus just on recruitment. Mm-hmm. For us, it's beyond recruitment. So we have all areas of the department where we might have issues, and it's not just uniform, it's civilian as well. So it is really the whole organization, which is very rare that, you know, one entity would just take a look to see what those issues are. And it's not that we don't look at issues that impact externally as well. We have been doing some work around disparities and outcomes of arrests and looking at policies and things like that. So it is quite the position, and so we're very proud of that. And the police commissioner is very bold in taking that step.
I think it's awesome, and I can't imagine with NYPD, I think most people know it's the biggest municipal police department in the world, correct?
We are.
So it must be a task in itself, you know, trying to get a grasp on all those issues in an agency so large.
Well, I mean, it definitely is a task. It certainly is not work that gets done overnight.
Sure.
I think the focus is to frame and to start looking at really some of our infrastructure to see what's happening around that first. And I think anybody who sort of takes on this work would be fooling themselves if they think they're going to make type of change the police commissioner is thinking about, you know, in a year or less than a year. But it is really ongoing work that involves everybody, so it's pretty impressive.
Do you see, Tracy, being with NYPD, do you see, because you know law enforcement is pretty much still male dominated, do you see a lot of females or women entering the force?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen a tremendous amount of change. I think what you will often find is in certain regions of the United States and then certain types of policing usually garners more women than others. It's certainly, you know, I'm always thrilled to see whomever gets to come in and wants to come in. I think it's always been something you and I have talked about, right? You know, who should be here and what type of skill sets. So, I mean, it definitely has gotten better. Where we, you know, still are doing a lot of work is around the environment you're coming in to work, you know, to work around. And that continues to be a challenge. Not that we haven't done a tremendous amount of work. But, you know, it is one of making sure that not only do you have the right folks in the door, but they also have the skill sets and they get the continued training they need to be successful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we forget that once we get them out of the academy, and unless they promote, we don't really focus anymore on, you know, sort of getting them developed and being well-rounded. I mean, you and I have talked about this. It's not just about the job. It's the balance between family and health and all of those things. And hoping we teach them a little bit differently than you and I.
Yeah, that's
when we came in.
Yeah, that's the one thing. You bring up a good point. I really wish that in the future, I think it's changing a little bit, but you hit on it, Tracy. I wish we would teach officers how to take better care of themselves, but not only physically but mentally.
Absolutely, but you know the thing that's still really troublesome, and this has been going on for years now, and this just tells you how stressful the job really is, and that's, you know, it's officer suicides. Mm-hmm. And this is a thing that is just heart-wrenching. I mean, you know, we've had them here at NYPD, and it is one of which you try to make sure you have all the resources available for everyone, but you also have to make sure the culture doesn't have them thinking that it, you know, you'll be thought of less of if you take advantage of that. And that's one of the things I think we still struggle with.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you 100%. I think, unfortunately, the environment is, well, you're not... you're not macho or whatever the, you know, whatever term you want to use, you know, they'll kind of look at you, not everybody, but it's kind of like looked down at, is that you're weak and you can't hack it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I do.
And there's nothing. And well, I know you do, but there's, I really wish that we would teach officers, you know, and I don't know how you teach that, or at least bring it up in the academy, you know, right when they're new, that, you know, it's okay if you have problems. It's okay to talk to people, because I still don't think we do that.
Well, I think we do versions of that. Mm-hmm. My question is whether or not, you know, do we really follow up and follow and check in, right? Sometimes when it's different than the way you and I learned it, we sort of kind of shrug our shoulders at it. But, I mean, I think I'm hearing now, and I can tell you here at NYPD, I mean, we have what we call, you know, blue karma. I mean, they're doing yoga. They certainly are doing it in Denver as well as meditation. So, I mean, folks are starting to think about that. But I think it's a little bit more than that. And mm-hmm. You're right. You know, if we taught them in the academy, my question is, the culture so powerful that although you may know that, why are you talking yourselves out of or thinking you can't? I think that's still the unknown there.
Now, but what's blue karma? I've never heard of this.
So we have, much like I think most police departments, you know, we have team sports. We have all kinds of things. But we also have a group of officers who teach yoga to officers and to community members. And so they are part of a larger group of sort of fitness opportunities the police department has, but it is definitely a different way to get at it. And so we are, you know, very thrilled, you know, with a group of officers who do this. And so it is one in which it's not just NYPD, my understanding. There's fire departments do it. And so it's something that, you know, has been going on at least for about a year, almost 2 years. And it's just gaining popularity, which is always a good thing.
Wow. I've never heard of it. That is, now, is this done on duty or is it something off duty or what?
They usually do it before or after. And then a lot of times on the weekends as well. So wow. They just try to get be as available as they possibly can. So, which is really great. And then I think like most police departments, you know, we have sports teams, you name it, we've got it. Mm-hmm. And so there is that push for fitness and to get folks involved. So it's always good to see it.
Now, is there a big like rivalry between like NYPD and the FD?
You know, it is. The hockey game is the worst. Hockey and football. Man, let me tell you. It is. You're going to have to come out and see this. I mean, it is something to see. It absolutely is. It's there, front and center.
I remember watching Rescue Me. I don't know if you ever heard of that show
years ago. I remember that. It was with Leary.
Yeah, Dennis Leary, and he was a firefighter. It was like post 9/11, and I remember watching an episode where NYPD and you know, the FD had this huge rival, you know.
Yeah.
And they were playing hockey, and they were playing all kinds of sports, but hockey was the big thing, and they'd get in the fights on the ice and everything.
Yeah, and so that's the one thing that's probably as close to TV realism. It is something to see. The passion is definitely there, and you have to love it. You have to see it, though. It's something to see.
Now, I was in a meeting a couple weeks ago, and they were talking, I mean, you know about the opiate crisis in the United States, and they were talking about how fentanyl is just more prevalent on the East Coast. What are you seeing that in NYPD?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing the exact same thing, and you know, definitely out in Staten Island, heavily hit. And so, you know, the same sort of responses and approaches that everybody else are taking with Narcan and everything else and trying to be very proactive. We're doing the same thing here and it continues. You know, you can imagine, you know, on our scale, all of the officers do have access to Narcan and carry it with them. And it is one in which this is, you know, sort of all, you know, it's not that we haven't had all hands on deck before. You know, we certainly experienced this in the, you know, the crack years. The approach was different. It wasn't more of a health crisis as it is now, but I'm hoping we learned from that it is one in which everybody's got to pay attention to what's going on. And I think it's, you know, we go back when we talk about the early remnants of DARE and all of those things, but it is beyond that. Yeah. It is, you know, a way of how do you disrupt not only things that are, you know, being piped into communities, but how do families and you know, and parents make sure that they're being vigilant with their kids. I mean, so it is, it's really, it doesn't feel different than other, you know, sort of crises that we had, but in a sense it is.
Yeah.
And so we're just trying to, like everyone else, I think, trying to stay focused and making sure that we've, you know, approaching it on multiple levels. So not just, you know, Narcan, but, you know, illegal sales and things like that. So it's just a lot of work and a lot of great work done by folks here.
Yeah, I've never thought in my career that we would be carrying, and I think it's good, but mm-hmm. we would be carrying Naloxone or Narcan to combat the, you know, the effects of opiate withdrawal. I never thought we'd get to a point where we're admitted. And I don't know if you have the nasal, I don't know what your officers carry.
Yeah, we do. But, and so, yeah, so we, I mean, we all never thought we'd get to this point, especially the differentiating responses we've had to drugs in the past, mm-hmm. you know, which created issues on their own. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, we move forward. I mean, we've always talked about not being able to arrest our way out of things. And, you know, this is one of the conversations we've always had around upstream issues, right? There's only so much police can do, and there's only so much we should be doing. And that has got to be a broadened conversation.
I agree.
And we see this specifically, you know, not just with drug issues, but with mental health issues. Mm-hmm. There's just spaces where, you know, everybody says, you know, well, you're first responders, that's why you should be there. But, you know, there is the time for the conversation, and we're certainly having it here, where we should not always be. And we have to talk about from a broader systems perspective, who else should be at the table, or actually who should be owning a majority of it. So that's that's a turn that finally I think is beginning to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, because we were open 24/7, you know, it was just very easy for people to say, let the cops do it. And it's just become so inappropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
among other things.
Yeah. And it's, you bring a good point. I mean, you know, the correctional system is the largest provider, as you know, of mm-hmm. mental health services in the country.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I agree with you. You can't, you know, you can't arrest your way out of these important issues of today, especially, you know, like you mentioned, opiates. You can't, there's got to be other alternatives out there besides just, and now we all know that sometimes people need to go to jail. I'm not saying that, but you can't keep arresting and thinking it's going to, because I don't know about where you're at, Tracy, but here in Colorado and Boulder, the jails are overcrowded.
Yeah. Yeah. And they'll tell you too. And you just mentioned it, right? They're the number one mental health provider. And then the questions you have to ask yourself, you know, how can that be? That's mm-hmm. not their primary role. And if they are the number one, you know, provider of mental health care, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, I think that corrections folks will tell you, you know, you look at our budgets, you know, is everybody getting the health that we say that they're going to get when they need mental health care? And I don't necessarily know if that's the case.
Where do you think we're going with this? I mean, I know it's a broad question, but, you know, in the future, I mean, a couple of years down the road, I mean, where do you think we're at with mental health issues and, you know, opiate crisis and other things out there? I mean, do you think it's going to be even more taxing? Do you think it's going to be even more troublesome for law enforcement? And where do you think we're headed?
Well, that's a really broad question.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you where I hope we're headed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping that most, I think, folks can see everybody has some level of mental health issues, right?
So not me. I'm perfectly sane.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why you're carrying a gun. You're so sane, brother. I get you. Stick with that. I'm hoping that, you know, first of all, I hope the stigma of asking and taking care of folks goes away. I think that's part of it.
That's a good point, yeah.
And the other part of it is, too, that we really need to put our money where our mouth is. You can't say it's a mental health issue and not put money to the issue. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm hoping that is really where we begin to invest our time, because I think we can all, you know, look at what's the cost of, you know, having to go and try to manage a mental health situation when you're not trained in it. Yeah. I think you're seeing a lot of differentiating responses, you know, with co-response teams and those things. And that's a start. But I just think that, you know, from a mental health perspective, we just have to own up and make sure that we're putting money where we should be putting money and making sure that folks are getting what they need. And that includes follow-up.
Yeah.
I think where we struggle is people who have the ability to take care of themselves usually do, and those who don't have a tendency to fall through the cracks, and that's typically what we're dealing with on the street. I'm hoping that the focus is really, the stigma has gone out of this, and then wherever people need to get it, they can get it.
And then what about reentry programs too?
So, I mean, reentry is a big part of that, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you think about the whole system is connected. So you can't have folks coming back into the community, you know good and well they need mental health, and there's been no connecting them to services. Mm-hmm. That just makes no sense. I mean, you're just really putting them back out to turn around and come back, you know, into another system that really wasn't that prepared to get them out in the first place. So, I mean, it's all of that. It's reentry. It is, you know, jobs when you get back to the community. It's the community, in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
The community has to be prepared to receive those folks coming back. So, I mean, there's lots of work to be done. And I think probably one of our questions we always talk about is, you know, if the funding is going in the appropriate places.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's always been a question we've always had. And we know, especially from a community standpoint, there's always a lot of community-led initiatives that should be receiving funding that don't necessarily get it. So it'll be interesting. It's a great question, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I tend to be optimistic, so I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, me too. And it all struck out what you just said. But you know, the stigmatism, like with you know, somebody who's suffering from an addiction, like when somebody has a heroin addiction, and you know, what's the first thing that comes into mind with most people? You know, when you say, well, this person has a heroin addiction, he's a bum, he's lazy, or she's lazy, they don't want to get it. But it spans every socioeconomic, but a lot of people are affected by this.
Absolutely. And a lot more than people, I think, talk about.
Yeah.
You know, and I think everybody watches closely the different, you know, the different responses. I think everybody can really talk about not just how hard it is on the family, but the devastating impact, to that family. And it's just, you know, I have a couple friends that have gone through that with loved ones, and they really, you know, they try to explain it to you, and they said, until you go through it, you just don't understand it. And I think that's the heartbreaking thing to me, is you want to be empathetic and be able to figure it out. But, you know, for me, it's talk to those folks who've lived through it. They usually are the ones that can sort of give you the best guidance and assistance on, you know, how should we start getting at this piece? And when you hear the stories, it's just devastating.
Well, and it's a rewiring of the brain, you know. People don't understand that. Addiction takes over, and it's, you know, there's so much stuff that people don't know about. I got a family member that's suffering from this.
And you just don't realize how powerful it is. Yeah. You know, I always hear people say, you know, well, if they want to stop, they can stop. And I'm like, I don't think you get this. Yeah. This is not that type of thing. And so it's very difficult. And I think part of that, too, is people don't understand how addiction works. I find that the other sort of truth is that there's a lot of myths and narratives, as you said, around addiction. And I just don't think people in general understand what it means when somebody has an addictive personality, whether that's to drug or to alcohol. So I think it's important.
Well, I wish we would start talking about it a little bit. I mean, I know, I understand the academies are jam-packed with curriculums and stuff that they have to teach. I get it. But I wish they would start, you know, scratching the surface with, because these aren't going away. This is the future. And like you, I'm an optimist. But I really wish that they would start talking about these issues. I go and visit my academy people occasionally, and they don't, I've seen the curriculum. They don't talk about officer wellness as much as they should, and they don't talk about the stuff we're just talking about.
And, you know, the struggle of all that, of trying to find what's the appropriate amount of things to teach in the academy, becomes one of either you're going to make that academy longer, and you know how that works. Everybody needs them out yesterday. Or we try to figure out what's the appropriate curriculum and that balance. And so I think that we certainly do try to give them classroom, at least here at NYPD, but we also try to balance that with the experiential. The recruits here prior to graduation, they actually go out to their home assignments for 2 weeks and begin to understand the communities in which they're getting ready to serve. So you have to almost be creative with it, because you know there's only so much you can do in a recruit curriculum. And so you have to just figure out different ways to get at it. You know, we have heavy use of technology here, which works with this new generation, almost getting things out to them that way. So they have, you know, snippets of learning. But it's you know, for me, it's just different ways of informing people. And if they're not, you know, where do you go to get it? I think that's the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is. There's so much we want them to learn, and we put so much on them. you know, and I think it's sometimes you have to think about really how much we're putting on one human being.
Yeah. And you mentioned technology, Tracy. I mean, technology, as you know, and most people, you and I have been doing this a while now, and it has changed so much.
Oh my God,
in law enforcement. And it's always a struggle to keep, at least in my agency, maybe not with NYPD, but it's always a struggle to keep with technology. Where do you think technology, I can't imagine what NYPD has as far as technology goes.
Well, I mean, we do pretty good with technology. I mean, you know, like most departments, you have to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
I always say, if you ever want to know where we're going with technology, go to the IACP and go to the toy room is what I call it, where all the vendors are. That'll tell you that's usually where everybody is. That'll tell you where we're going. I mean, you walk through there and just alone, think of the progression of Taser.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable amounts of technology. And I'm hoping to, you know, hopefully to an extent someday, you know, where officers are just, you know, for me, are absolutely 100% protected. And yeah. I think that, you know, so you see the new Kevlar vests and helmets and things like that and the tactical pieces and
body cams.
I think it's unlimited, basically, yeah, yeah. Where they could go with it. But, I mean, I don't think you can ever get away from the human interaction. At least I hope you don't, because that's a
well, no, I agree with you. I don't think we're ever going to take the place of, look, there's people want a cop showing up.
Exactly.
I don't think that's ever going to go away, but technology can definitely help. You know, body cams. And speaking of body cams, was it NYPD that had that body cam that exploded?
Okay, so it didn't explode. So
I'm feeding into the rumors.
You
I'm sorry.
I know. Why would I think you're at home just going like, oh, let me call Tracy real quick.
No.
What that photograph looked like.
No, we were talking about technology, so I just wanted to, I couldn't remember if it was NYPD or.
Yeah, so we did. We had a camera that actually, I'm going to say it was like a circuit board that had malfunctioned, but it did smoke. So, and the officer was okay, which was critical. But I mean, but think about that, right? So we have thousands of cameras deployed.
Oh, I cannot imagine.
You know, so you can imagine the amounts of, you know, recordings that we have, but it speaks to the technology, right?
Yeah,
so, I mean, you think about not just where on, you know, technology, whichever you purchase, but how they all work together. I mean, I think like everybody else, I think we have ShotSpotter and, you know, we have Taser and we have cameras. I mean, so it is really one of which when you see things that happen in New York, if it were not for the camera system in the city, mm-hmm. We wouldn't pick up a lot of the things that we do and, you know, grateful to the community who always calls in and steps up. But technology has pulled us a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, we have video of things we probably never thought we would get video of. And I have to, you know, sort of remind you back to the, you know, the bombing we had in the subway.
Yeah.
I mean, all of that was videotaped. I mean, it was such a learning moment for all of us. So mm-hmm. technology does do, you know, really good things for us. And I think that it's probably only as far as the imagination will let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when we had, you know, large brick radios, we never thought we'd go, you know, sort of digital and definitely didn't think we'd have computers in the cars. And now we have kids walking around with tablets and smartphones and all kinds of things. So, I mean, I think it's hopefully for the better, but yeah. I'm hoping we don't move away too much from the human interaction.
Well, I hope we don't move into the humor interaction or move away from that interaction as far as, you know, the human touch. But then, as you know, Tracy, with technology always comes legal issues, Fourth Amendment issues, things like that. I don't know if I'm sure you guys have drones.
No, we not yet. We were still looking.
Oh, wow.
But it's not just drones, right? So you even have legal issues with body cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is. There's always, I mean, because with new field becomes new, you know, new liability and, mm-hmm. and definitely new questions. But, you know, much like everything else, I'm sure, you know, hopefully the courts will work through those fairly quickly.
Now, what advice, I think I asked you this last time, I'm going to ask you it again.
Okay.
What advice would you give people who want to start a career in law enforcement in this day and age? It's a very, it's always been a tough environment. It's always been a tough job. What would you tell people out there who want to get into it?
Well, I would be honest and say it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But it is a career if you want to have one. And I think it's a meaningful one, especially if you want to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the thousands of us that make the choice to do this, you know, have done so because we do want to serve and we try to do it honorably. I think it's a wonderful career to raise your family, certainly to raise yourself and to learn all the types of things you probably think you would never learn. But I would also say that you have to be mindful that this job can really change you mm-hmm. if you are not balanced and if you don't have support that you need around it. And you have to take care of yourself yeah. if this is what you want to do. But for folks who want to do it, I say do it. Mm-hmm. I can tell you it's been good to me. It's been good to my family. I believe I've been good for the community as well. Mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed it. I wouldn't do anything different.
So what's your morning routine, Tracy? I always found that, you're very very successful. What do you do in the morning? I found that most successful people have some sort of routine, that they do in the morning, whether it's meditation, yoga, journaling, exercise. What do you do?
I do meditate. Mm-hmm. So it is the first thing I do in the morning, actually. Mm-hmm. I do 15 minutes of meditation. And that's typically followed by some type of movement. I actually broke my foot, so I am not as mobile as I have loved to have been in the last probably 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it does start out for me every day. It starts out for me with meditation. Mm-hmm. Once I do that, I try not to pick up my work phone until I'm in the car. Really, I really do.
I know.
I pick up my work phone until I'm in the car. And so it really, that is for me. And then I, of course, like everybody else, have a routine. I'm a Starbucks junkie, so I'll be the first to tell you that. But I usually start with meditation, some form of movement, get out the door. While I'm in the car, I am literally reading emails for the morning, looking at the calendar. Looking at the calendar about a week to 2 weeks out to see if I need to make any adjustments or readjust.
Yeah.
My husband's 2 hours behind me, so I haven't heard from him yet.
Yeah.
And I'm, typically just trying to get ready for the day. Mm-hmm. I really try to focus on getting at least two or three concrete things done a day because mm-hmm. you could be inundated with meetings, back-to-back meetings.
Yeah.
So I really try to do that, as well as make time to meet with my exec staff and sort of stay on board. And so, as well as the PC, it is that. But I think that for me, what's worked for me the 29 years is the same thing you stick with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the get up in the morning, the meditation, some kind of movement, but managing your stress and your workload the best that you can. And I hadn't always done that.
Yeah. Me either.
I was eating it, living it, and breathing it. And it cost me in a number of ways.
Yeah.
But for now, you get older now, plus you don't move as fast and you have to be in bed by 9. So that always helps. Getting older helps. So, and then trying to go to bed on time.
Yes, sleep is very important.
I did not realize. I think I was listening to one of your shows. I did not realize how important it is.
Yeah.
To understand the amount of sleep that your body needs.
Oh yeah. It's crazy. And then once you start getting on that schedule, where you have kind of a set schedule and you're home every night and you're getting that rest, it's amazing.
It is. It's guilt pleasure. It's you feel bad. You wake up in the morning feeling good. It's like, this is not right. I used to, I think most of us, when you get started and then when you start to move through the ranks, I would say pretty sleep deprived.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I could remember doing 4 hours and getting up and then, going back and working another 12 or 13. But I think part of what we realize now, which we would have told our younger selves is, all of that, the connection between sleep and your health and and weight and everything else. And I think those are the sort of the key pieces. But I can tell you this, my routine is nothing compared to the police commissioner's.
Oh,
and
he
finds time every morning.
I can't even imagine.
Every morning.
What's that?
Every morning. He works out every morning.
Well, that's awesome because, I think it's good that you have to work out. You have to take care of yourself. I can't imagine. You're stressed. I'm stressed. I can't imagine what the commissioner is. His stress level is probably through the roof.
It's on a totally different level.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, he's pretty cool doing it. I have to give him credit for that one.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty cool doing it. So, I don't even – I think I made the mistake of asking what his schedule looked like one day, and I just said, never mind. I think I was getting ready to whine about something, and then I said, never mind, I'm good. Keep walking. It's like, pick another question.
Well, Tracy Kesey, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're wonderful. You're a rock star. The next time you're in Denver, please, let's get together and buy some coffee, maybe lunch.
As always, if you're buying, you know I'm coming.
Absolutely. Tracy.
And thank you. And congratulations on the show. Oh, my gosh.
Really, thank you so much. It's growing because I have wonderful guests like you coming on. And, yeah, it continues to grow. So I thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're a very busy woman.
And,
I appreciate you coming on the show. And have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. You are preparing for the NYPD. What is it, Macy's Day Parade?
Oh yes, it's Macy's Day. I'm gonna, like a little kid, I'm gonna be there.
You're gonna go out there throwing candy and stuff?
Oh my gosh, I am. I'm gonna probably just try to control myself. It's something to see. It's quite the spectacle. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, take care, Tracy. Until next
take
time.
Care. All right. Bye bye.
All right. Bye bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.